Blog Talk Radio.
March 20th, people, are you ready for football? Turn off your TVs, forget about the NCAA sport just a little bit, all right? We're here at the All Access Football Friday show. Today we have for you, on our player spotlight, we have Tim Jamison, we have Larry English, we have Clay Matthews, we have Keith Rivers, the linebacker from Cincinnati. We're going to have Andrew Gardner, who's going to break down what's going on in pro days this week. We have our new host coming aboard, Brian Spector. We have on the clock, we have the Green Bay Packers and the San Francisco 49ers. And also, don't forget to go into the chat room. And if you have a question, comment, or complaint, let us have it. All right? Once again, I am Rodney Tao. Daniel Mogan-Yon here. What's up, Dan?
What's up, Rodney? How's it going?
Excellent. Everything's going
it
great.
It is 36 days until the NFL draft. Can you believe that?
Yes, sir. Ralph Mancini, what's going on?
Good evening, guys. Ready for another football schmoozathon?
Oh, yeah. All right, let's get it started with a little bit of news. Things are quieting down a little bit right now on the free agent front. But unfortunately, we have a situation. Dante Stallworth, I should say, of the Cleveland Browns last week struck and killed a pedestrian in Miami last week. And they drew his blood. So that's right now they're speculating that he failed, that he was intoxicated. That hasn't been proven yet. We have Matt Jones released by the Jacksonville Jaguars. You remember Matt Jones. He was the guy who came out as a quarterback from Arkansas, ran a 4.4 and a 40 at 6.5 and became a number one draft pick by the Jaguars, who can't seem to catch a break when it comes to that wide receiver position. Gentlemen, your comment on that one.
Let's start with Matt Jones. I mean, he violated probation, as we all know. I mean, he was caught with cocaine a little bit over a year ago. And really, you know, I mean, what do you make out of Matt Jones? Obviously, he's not the brightest bulb out there. He's not the most mature player. And I really can't blame the Jacksonville Jaguars of finally ridding themselves of this problem child. Now, can he go out there and help some teams out? The one thing that Matt Jones showed me last year is that he's actually a player. I mean, this is a guy who could contribute. He's got excellent size, 6'6", can run like the wind, and he's a factor in the red zone. And there are a lot of teams out there looking for some help at the wide receiver position. It's all up to Matt Jones now. He will be given another chance, but he has to mature, and he has to mature quickly.
Okay, and also released was Mike McKenzie from the Saints. I mean, this was a guy, was their cornerback more victimized over the last 2-3 years than Mike McKenzie since he went to New Orleans? Because it seemed like every time he watched New Orleans, he was getting burnt.
Well, in his defense, he did suffer a major knee injury and was just never the same ever since that little ailment. But, you know, Mike McKenzie's getting up in years. He's just not the same player he used to be with the Green Bay Packers.
And let me correct myself. That's not Mike McKenzie I'm thinking about. I'm actually thinking about the kid they signed out of Indianapolis. Mike McKenzie was actually a very good cornerback for a long time. All right, soap opera time. This is the NFL. It's the off season, so of course someone has to give us the soap opera. And this year, courtesy of the Denver Broncos and Jay Cutler, we have As the Cutler Turns. All right. First we hear Cutler won the trade out. They fired the quarterback coach when Shanahan left. He won it out, supposedly. Then you heard that his agent was trying to arrange a trade. Then you also hear now that Josh McDaniels from the Patriots was trying to get Matt Castle to the Broncos. Excuse me. Okay. And now Jay Cutler's hurt. His feelings are hurt, and he wants out. What's the story here? What's going on? What's really going on? Did he want to trade before or after the Castle fiasco?
Both, maybe. I think he wants a trade and or a hug or maybe all of the above. I don't know. He wants what all these guys want. He wants some love. I want to be loved. I want to be wanted. You know, it's very romantic, these relationships, when you think about it, you know. It's similar to marriage. There's a lot of romance and there's a lot of tugging over money when it comes to organizations and players. And basically that's what it is. You know, he wants to be the man. He wants to be the quarterback. He wants the new regime, I think, especially because – he felt like, okay, Shanahan was there forever, veteran-proven coach, 2 Super Bowl rings. I understand he's the man. But now you got this kid coming over here. He looks like he's my age, coming over from New England, unproven guy. And I think maybe he wanted to feel like, hey, now it's, you know, they got to court me a little bit now, or they got to show me a little bit love now. And, you know, frankly, I don't think either side has handled this particularly well.
Well, look, I mean, Jay Cutler is one thing that we know about him. He's got a little bit of an arrogant streak to him, and you could see that in the way he plays, in his body language. And as Dan said, he wants to be respected. You know, I think a lot of this talk is being overblown. I think if the Denver Broncos show him a new contract, because he's not making big money right now, if they show him a new contract to make a commitment to him, I don't think he'll be hearing a lot of complaining coming from the Jay Cutler camp. But, you know, as things are, he does want to trade, and it'll be interesting to see if a trade can be consummated, because there are teams out there that can use a guy who's 25 years old, has a rocket arm, and has a world of potential.
Okay. Thank you, Ralph. We've got our first guest coming up in a minute. That's Clay Matthews, the linebacker from USC. Hey, Clay, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
We're doing well. I'm Rodney Tao, Daniel Mogagnon, and also Ralph Mancini here. Welcome. Thank you, and welcome to the All Access Football Friday show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Clay, let me start off by asking you, I got a couple questions for you here. You know, being a guy that some people view as a, you know, outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense, when you hear the term hybrid, what comes to mind? What are you thinking?
Just versatility. So, you know, someone who can play a multitude of positions. And, you know, for me personally, that's, you know, playing in a 3-4 or 4-3, whether that's, you know, playing an outside linebacker or, you know, a rush defensive end or stand-up linebacker, however you want to look at it, just someone who can obviously bring more to the table than just your traditional one-position player. So I see myself filling, you know, a lot of roles.
And conversely, how about when you hear the term tweener thrown around, what goes through your mind?
Well, you know, obviously, I could, you know, it depends how you take that, whether that be a good or bad thing. But I think, in, you know, for certain people, they call, you know, Dwight Freeney's a tweener. You know, obviously, you know, to a little smaller than your typical defensive end, but, you know, he brings, you know, he's got a lot of speed and a great motor to him. So, you know, I think it could, you know, really work to my advantage, whether, you know, whatever position they want to play me at.
Hey, Clay, Ralph Mancini here. I guess a lot of people by now know your story. You came to USC as a walk-on. You had a fight and scratch your way to finally become a starter in your senior year. My question to you is, where did you get that competitive nature from? Is it something that your dad instilled in you? And was your father, who was an NFL pro for 19 years, was your father extremely hard on you growing up as a kid?
Yeah, I think it is something that was just ingrained with me just from, you know, since day one. I've always been out to prove that I'm the best in anything, even, you know, in every facet of life. I'm always just out there to prove that, you know, I deserve to be here and that I deserve to be respected. So, you know, it's something that I've had since day one. And, you know, my dad's never been, you know, too hard on me, but he's been hard enough. You know, he's not one of those, you know, he was my coach in high school, but he's not going to be one of those coaches who, you know, puts his son in there just because he's his son. He's the guy who benched me my junior year and, you know, didn't start me as a linebacker my junior year. So, you know, it's just something that I've developed throughout my life. And obviously, you know, without him and my family and just my background experience with football, I probably wouldn't be in the position I am today. But, you know, he definitely, you know, helped with my attitude and just, you know, my stick-to-itiveness and wanting to get after and playing with a chip on my shoulder.
And also, Clay, why did you choose USC? I mean, obviously, you have family ties there, but did you get any other offers, any scholarship offers from any other schools when you did become a collegiate?
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't have any other offers coming out of high school. You know, like I said, I didn't play my junior year. I wasn't a starter. My senior year, I came on strong, but it was a little late in the recruiting process. I was still a little undersized, needed to get faster, stronger, bigger, you know, the whole nine yards. And, you know, it just turned out that SC was a perfect fit. Like you said, obviously I had a great, you know, a rich family history there. It's close to home, only about 45 minutes away. Obviously what Coach Carroll had been doing over there, building his program up, and the education too. Obviously being a walk-on, I didn't know if this would be the career path that I was going to take. So, you know, academics is very important to me. But I think just overall it was a great fit for me. And, you know, it's not your typical career, but, you know, it's maybe the player who I am today, and I'm very fortunate for that.
Hey, Clay, when your dad benched you that junior year then, did you let him know that, hey, you know, if you bench me, this may lead to you needing to pay for my tuition rather than me getting a scholarship?
Well, I think it was just, it was more so out of the fact that, you know, not him benching me, but, you know, the fact that there was someone who was better than me. And, you know, obviously in America and, you know, and anywhere for that matter, the best player, company, any, you know, in every facet of life, the best thing's going to happen. And, you know, there was a person that was better than me, so obviously he got the chance to start, and, you know, I didn't deserve it. And, you know, my senior year I did, and, you know, I think we both didn't know, you know, what the future was going to be for me in regards to football. And he even asked me when I decided I wanted to walk on the SC if I wanted to choose a smaller school and be able to make an impact right away. And you know, I was very content on going to SC and hopefully earning a scholarship, getting on some special teams and, you know, becoming a demon on those. But, you know, it turned out to be so much more. And, you know, I don't think either of us, you know, thought this could potentially happen. But, you know, it's just something you just keep sticking with and, you know, great things happen. And here I am now in a great position for myself.
Well, let me ask you this then. Being a kid that had that decision to make, you know, you step onto the USC campus and you got Keith Rivers there, you got Ray Maluga there, you got Brian Cushing there, all these big name 4- or 5-star recruits. Do you think, you know, your background helped you a lot there in terms of, you know, you being a walk-on, you weren't intimidated and you thought, hey, I could still play with these guys, and if I work hard enough, I can reach that level?
The only thing that my background helped was getting me into the school and just being a walk-on, getting looked at. Everything else I had to take within my own hands and earn, you know, everything that I've been through. And I've just been working my way up through the ranks. And you're right, you know, when you go to SC, you're going to play against 5-star and play along with 5-star recruits, like you said, Keith, Ray, Cush, and, you know, it's just part of the business. And I knew going there I was going to have to work that much harder. And, you know, I consider myself to work that much harder than other people to be in the position I am today. So, you know, I'm very fortunate to have played with them, and, you know, it's a question that's thrown around a lot, but it does make us the players who we are today is the fact that we have to compete against one another, you know, day in and day out. So, you know, we're real fortunate for all that, and I think that's why we're in such a great position. And, you know, it's obviously unusual for a walk-on to be in the state, but, you know, I knew I'd have to come, you know, come in each and every day and work my tail off, and, you know, that's what I did.
All right. I mean, as we sit here 36 days from the draft, and now you're being spoken as a guy who can't go in the first round with your more celebrated teammates, Ray Maluga and Brian Cushing. I mean, how does that make you feel in terms of the work that you've done to get to this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great deal. I think it's just a testament to, you know, like you said, the hard work that I've put in. So, you know, I'm very appreciative of that, and the fact that it's gone, it's been noticed, and scouts, GMs, and coaches, you know, understand what the type of player who I am. And, you know, to be in the talks with those guys, like you said, Cushing and Ray, it does mean a great deal. But just to, you know, to be able to share with them and, you know, be highly regarded with all the players on the team and, you know, be in a situation where I am, I'm very fortunate and blessed. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to this opportunity.
Hey, Clay, your teammate, Brian Cushing, he was quoted as saying that his goal is becoming mentally a better player each and every day. Can you talk about that? Could you talk about the mental preparation that goes in, for you personally, the mental preparation that goes into preparing for next week's opponent?
Oh, it obviously takes a great deal of mental, you know, toughness just to be in a position where we are right now. But, you know, it's only going to get more difficult. And I think, fortunately for me, I had a, you know, everyone knows my story now, in which I had to walk on and work my way up. And that alone takes a great deal of mental toughness. So, you know, a lot of people ask if it's been a grind going to the Senior Bowl, if it's been a grind going to Indianapolis, and I can, you know, honestly, it really hasn't been for me because, shoot, I was a walk-on at SC for 5 years. So, I mean, you know, it can't get much harder anywhere else. So I'm just, you know, I'm loving this opportunity and just having a blast with it and, you know, taking it day by day. And I'm, you know, like I said, I'm fortunate and blessed to be in this position. And, you know, I realize, you know, it's funny because my brother had mentioned to me before this last season how neat it would be if I was able to get drafted, you know, even in the 7th round. And now here we are talking about a potential first-round draftee. So, you know, it's something that we all dream about, and I've been fortunate enough to be in this position, and, you know, it requires a great amount of mental toughness, and, you know, it'll only get tougher from here on out.
All right, Clay, I had one more for you. Talk about the influence that Pete Carroll and your linebacker coach, Ken Norton Jr., had on you during your collegiate career at USC.
They had a great influence. Obviously, just being the, you know, people who they are, you know, starting with Coach Carroll, he just, you know, his whole program, you really have to buy into it when you get there. And I think everyone's done a great job at that, and that's why we've been so successful there. And you know, also a big part of his program is, you know, you'll always hear us talking about it and him talking about it, and that's competing. And that's, you know, day in and day out coming in and working together and, you know, at the same time getting in little fights here and there, but, you know, getting better and working towards something. And, you know, like I said, I think that's why we've been so fortunate to be, you know, Rose Bowl champions and national champions and just been in the spotlight how we've been and just because of his program. And, you know, he's really a player's coach, being in, you know, coaching in the NFL and understanding how it works. And it's more than just coaching. You know, he's your friend on the side, too, so that makes it a lot easier for all of us to have a personal relationship with them. And, you know, I can say that about Coach Norton, too, is the fact that, you know, he's a player's coach because he played in the league. And because he was so successful, he's able to relate it to us and all the linebackers. And I think that's why we've been, you know, had so much success with him at the helm, you know, with our linebacker class. And, you know, why you'll hear talks of SC becoming the new linebacker U. So, you know, it's really a testament to the coaching and the work we've put in. So, you know, they've both done a great job, and all the coaches have done a great job there. So they really put us in the position we are today.
All right, Clay, thus far, have you had any private workouts with specific NFL teams, and do you have any coming up?
I have a few coming up next week with the Washington Redskins and Miami Dolphins, and then I have my pro day April 1st, and after that, I have Atlanta coming out on the 4th, and I'm flying out to Cleveland a little later in that month, so I'm sure it's only going to get you know, more stressful as time goes on, and then hopefully after draft day, I'll be able to put my feet up.
All right, Clay, well, before we let you go, we got three quick questions. We call this our third and out. I'm going to lead off with one question, all right? Saturday night, what is Clay Matthews doing on a Saturday night typically?
Saturday night, Clay Matthews usually stays in and watches a movie with either by himself or with a friend. I'm a big movie buff and just you know, love catching up on it and being my own Siskel and Ebert or Roper or whoever, just being a critique.
All right, second down. So since you are such a movie buff, what is your favorite movie of all time?
Of all time? That's hard to say, but there's some great ones up there. I really like Shawshank Redemption. You know, Forrest Gump is so easy to watch. Those are those classic movies that when you could turn them on, you could pick it up at any point and just really enjoy it. Those are probably my you know, top two favorite movies.
All right, Clay, I was going to ask you who has better hair, you or Ray Maluga, but I'm going to defer to the chat room. Somebody from the chat room wanted to know how many times do Snoop or Will Ferrell show up at USC practice?
Well, I think your first question is a no-brainer in having better hair myself, but we'll go ahead and skip that part. But, you know, we do have celebrities come by a lot during practice, obviously being in the SC with, you know, in the middle of Los Angeles with no professional football team. And obviously we like to consider ourselves America's team, so we have celebrities, you know, coming through here and there. And, you know, Snoop came by, I think, two times during my tenure there. And Will Ferrell, he somehow makes a guest appearance usually twice a year. And it's real great because it gets our mind off of, you know, the whole business aspect of sports. And we can just have a good time and, you know, really enjoy ourselves, but at the same time know what's at stake. So that's what we love about SC, is the fact that we can mix fun with business and be successful at doing it.
All right, Clay, we want to thank you very much for spending some time with us. And we look forward to seeing you on Sunday. Good luck with the draft.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, Clay. All right. That was the
outspoken kid, huh?
That was the outstanding linebacker from USC, Clay Matthew, who has put himself right up there with his boys, Cushion and Maluga, and some are even speculating that he may actually turn out to be the best of the three, which is mind-boggling considering he's a walk-on. No, but it just goes to show, it doesn't matter where you start, just do the work.
Oh, exactly. When I talk to these kids all the time, I bring that up. You know, a lot of times, you know, they hear the whispers, and if they're not hearing as much positive stuff as they'd like about themselves, you know, you try to remind them, hey, it doesn't even matter where you go on draft day. Obviously, you want to get drafted higher, you know, status-wise, money-wise, contract-wise. But, you know, we always see guys who pan out. You know, at the end of the day, it matters what you do when you show up in the fall.
And it also matters what team you end up on as well. I mean, you could be taken with the 5th pick overall, but, you know, you might be in a situation where you're stuck behind some big stars, whereas, you know, maybe if you get drafted later on, you might end up on a team where there's an immediate need for somebody at your position, and you need to step up that first year. So, you know, I mean, there is no hard and fast rule. I mean, you know, whether you get picked 5th or 15th or 25th, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, match your shoulders, do the work. If you have some talent, do the work, and good things can happen for you. All right, but next up, we've got our on-the-clock segment. Next up, the Green Bay Packers, picking number 9. Okay, let's look at Green Bay. 6-10 last year, third in the NFC North. The offense was ranked number 8, and remember, that's what Aaron Rodgers replacing the legendary Brett Favre. The defense is ranked number 20. Looking at the last 5 years for this franchise, they've been 41-39. Just listen to these records, 13-3, 8-8, 4-12, 10-6. Remember, all adults with Brett Favre. Looking at the last 5 first-round draft picks, Jordy Nelson, jury's still out on him. Justin Howell, injuries
right now.
We got A.J. Hawk, who's not been the great linebacker we've all expected him to be thus far. And, of course, we have Aaron Rodgers from 05. And from 04, Ahmad Carroll, who's now with the Jets.
The Batman. You know what's interesting with the Green Bay Packers? I mean, when you look at their record over the last 5 years, as you mentioned, 41-39, and they're like the epitome of the NFL. They had an 8-8 season, they had a 10-6 season, a 6-10 season, a 13-3 season, and a 4-12 season. So, you know, you can be mediocre, you can be pretty bad, or you can be really good or really bad, and it can all happen, and all of it can happen in the span of 4 or 5 years. That's the NFL in a nutshell. That's what they want. They want every team to be 41-39 over the last 5 years.
Yeah, but the Steelers just won't cooperate.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, when you take a look at this Green Bay team, they're not your typical 4-12 team. When you see that record on paper, you would think that this is a team that's deficient in talent, a team that needs to rebuild. When, you know, that's not the case, especially on offense. They do have, in my opinion, a franchise quarterback. They do have outstanding skill position players. But their problem last year was on defense. And they had some significant injuries on defense early on in the season. One of their best defensive linemen, Colin Jenkins, went down with a torn ACL. And then later on in the season, their best linebacker, Nick Barnett, also went out with a torn ACL. And, you know, towards the end of the season, they just couldn't stop anybody. So now they bring in Dom Capers as their defensive coordinator. He's going to instill his new 3-4 system. And, you know, right now, despite his reputation, there are a lot of question marks on this team in terms of their defense. They're going to have to move some players around in new positions that they never played before. You're talking about their best pass rusher, Aaron Kampman, who's going to be moved to outside linebacker.
At an older age.
Yes,
you know, he's not a young guy coming out at his athletic peak.
Right. And then you have Ryan Pickett, who was your traditional D tackle in the 4-3, now he's going to have to play nose tackle, and we all know how physically demanding that position could be. So, and then we could even go into the defensive backfield, and you have question marks there. Over at safety, Atari Bigbee, after a tremendous 2007 season, wasn't himself in 2008. And then they have two quarterbacks in Al Harris and Charles Woodson who are getting up there in years. So where do you go? Where do you go with this team? I think, number one, they need to build up the depth over on the defensive line, both at defensive end and at nose tackle. They lost Colin Cole to the Seattle Seahawks in free agency. I think they need to bring in a backup to play behind Pickett. I think they could use some more defensive ends to build up their depth in that area as well. And I think they do need to shore up the secondary, both at cornerback and at safety. And then over on offense, I don't think there's any, like, really glaring needs. If I were to pick one, I would say maybe at tight end. You know, Aaron Lee over there at tight end, he just wasn't the same player he was the year before. Jermichael Finley was a rookie from last year, a guy that Dan is high on. And he really hasn't proven anything, a bit of a head case. So maybe at tight end, that could be a position that, you know, they could address in the draft. But I'm thinking that they're going to go heavy on defense. What are your views on that, Dan?
Yeah, I agree, especially when you're changing a defensive system. As you mentioned, you're going to need guys that fit in that scheme. I know you have number one nose tackle as their top need there. The only guy, really, we're talking about day one, I mean, I don't want to get too much into start trying to predict who they're going to take in the fifth round or sixth round or something like that. So when we go day one, you got the ninth pick overall, ninth pick in the second round. The only guy I really see them taking as a nose man could be Ron Brace if he's there with that ninth pick in the second round. The problem is a lot of teams are going to be looking at this guy for that very reason. He's really the only guy that gives you that kind of value at that spot. Defensive end. Same thing. There's nobody really worthy of that ninth overall pick. Guys like Tyson Jackson, Jaron Gilbert out of San Jose State, and Derek Marks are all guys that could be options there as 3-4 type defensive ends. Brandon Pettigrew, a tight end, 9th overall. I don't know. To me, that's a stretch. I know some people have them in their top 10. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. And as you mentioned, they did use a third-round pick on Jermichael Finley. And while I did like him, you know, we did say, hey, this is a bit of a project because he was a redshirt sophomore, a guy that probably should have came back to school. Ironic, considering so many guys, you know, come back for their senior year at Texas, and this is one of the rare guys that decides to leave as a redshirt sophomore. So he was kind of a developmental pick, you know, with upside and potential down the road. I think a guy that really makes sense if he falls to them is Malcolm Jenkins. I think that would be a really nice pickup for them. And, you know, from what we hear, he could be available very easily with that 9th overall pick. And offensive tackle was another need. We kind of talked a little bit about this last week where teams are kind of in between, a little too low to get the big two guys, Monroe or Smith out of Baylor. And I'm not sure if you want to be taking Andre Smith or Michael Orr with a top 10 pick right now at this point. It's possible. It's possible, but once again, that second round pick makes more sense here with the offensive tackle. So if you forced me to take a pick here, I think the value and the need, the guy that makes the most sense if he's there would be Malcolm Jenkins.
Yeah, I agree with that. And by the way, I wanted to make a correction. Their starting tight end last year wasn't Aaron Lee, was Donald Lee. But yeah, I mean, those names that you brought up all make a lot of sense. And I think Jenkins is the type of smart player who's versatile that can make an impact in his first year. And as I said, this defense does need some impact players. There are a lot of question marks here. So it's really, you really have a mixed bag here. And Dom Capers has his work cut out for him.
Okay. Yes. Gentlemen, we're going to go right on to our next on the clock segment. Next team up, picking number 10, is going to be the San Francisco 49ers, a team that's going 7-9, that went 7-9 last year, finishing second in the NFC West. Last 5 years, they've gone 25-55 with the records at 5-11, 7-9, 4-12, 2-14. The offense was ranked 23rd. Defense was ranked 13th. Looking at their last five first-round picks, last year was Kentuan Ballmer. Jury's still out, first year, hard to say. Now they got an absolute stud the year before that in Patrick Willis. Vernon Davis, looks like he may have possibly turned the corner last year under Mike Singletary.
Really?
We've got Alex Smith. That one doesn't look like it's going to work out. And we've got Rashawn Woods. That one didn't work out. I mean, looking at San Francisco, I mean, where is this team going? Who's the quarterback? J.T. O'Sullivan started for a significant portion last year. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
And he's going. Sean Hill, who finished up strong, he hasn't gotten that vote of confidence from the coach. So, could they be in the market for a quarterback?
Well, I mean, right now, this is Sean Hill's job to lose. You know, Alex Smith is a guy that they didn't want any part of, but he decided to, and he accepted a huge pay cut. So to his credit, he is going to be given an opportunity to fight for that starting position at quarterback. But right now, Hill seems to be the guy, and as I said, it's his job to lose. Now, the question you ask yourself with the San Francisco 49ers is, even with Hill there, is he your franchise quarterback? And to me, although I think he did a good job last year and he's a decent quarterback, I don't think he's a guy that can win you too many games. You know, I think that he does his job. He's a smart quarterback, throws a catchable ball. But I don't think this is a guy you can count on for the next 5, 6, 8 years. So if that franchise quarterback is there for them in the draft, if they think that Mark Sanchez, if they think that Josh Freeman is that guy, I think that they should definitely draft that quarterback. But, you know, this is a team with some other needs as well. You know, going over on defense, you know, they didn't have much of a pass rush, had 30 sacks, which is kind of middle of the road. But, you know, playing in that 3-4 scheme, they really need that outside linebacker that's going to be that intimidating pass rusher, that speed guy off the edge. A guy they drafted a few years ago, Manny Lawson, really hasn't been that guy. I mean, last year only had about 3 sacks. They don't need that. They need a guy that can run about 10 sacks a year, double digits. So I think that going into the draft, obviously, to me, their number one need would be quarterback. if that guy isn't there, if they don't feel a franchise quarterback is there in day one or in the first round, then I think that they could look at outside linebacker. I think another area of need is at safety. You know, last year, their free safety, Mark Roman, just didn't make any plays. As a matter of fact, the guy hasn't had an interception in the past 2 years. So they need playmakers on defense. Another thing that Coach Michael Singletary is trying to do, going back to the offensive side of the ball, is he's trying to make this team into more of a running team. And to do that, he brought in Jimmy Ray as his offensive coordinator. To me, it's a questionable move because Jimmy Ray's been more of a running backs coach during his career in the NFL and has been with some pretty bad teams. But this is the direction that Mike Singletary wants to go in. And if he's serious about it, then I think he has to also look at offensive tackle on the right side. Jonas Jennings is not going to get re-signed. So he needs to bring in somebody that can make a difference in that running game. You know, Frank Gore is the unquestioned franchise running back, featured running back. And I also think that, you know, with Deshaun Foster, who's probably not going to be re-signed, I think it would be nice for them at some point to also bring in a running back as well. So we're talking about quarterback, we're talking about tackle, we're talking about outside linebacker, we're talking about safety. Those are areas of needs. And what am I leaving out here? What about tight end? You mentioned Vernon Davis. To me, the guy looks like Charles Atlas, but he can't run a route if his life depended on it. So to me, he's been a bust. And I would also look at tight end. You know, even if you bring in a guy that can block well, I think that can help out the team if you're really serious about bolstering that running game.
So, I mean, basically, I could almost go any direction with this pick. I mean, you give me a lot of leeway, ironically, for a team that, you know, almost finished 500 last year. So I guess it's pretty impressive that they made it as good as they did. I think definitely quarterback could be a position where they go at number 10. I would be stunned if Mark Sanchez wasn't there if they wanted to go in that direction. Could Stafford be there? Yeah, he could be there. I mean, if the Lions don't take him, I could see him falling to 10 to the 49ers, and I think they'd be more than happy to get him. They're looking for that outside linebacker tweener type guy. They're going to be able to draft that guy with the first pick that they have, 10th overall, or in the second round if they want to wait to then to get it. We're talking about guys like Everett Brown, Brian Arakpo, Clay Matthews Jr., who we just spoke to, Brian Cushing, his teammate at USC, Aaron Maben from Penn State, Connor Barwin from Cincinnati, Larry English, who we're going to have on in a little bit, as well as Clint Sintem from Virginia. You know, obviously some of these guys are more first-round guys, some are more second-round guys. The interesting thing there is you have the mix of guys who've played in this defense and guys who haven't played in this defense. So Clay Matthews Jr., a Brian Cushing, a Clint Sintem are more proven linebackers. The other guys are more projections. You know, these guys are impressive athletes that are a bit undersized at defensive end who you're trying to project to move to the outside. So do you go for a guy like an Arakpo? I mean, most people think he'll be off the board at this point. How about an Everett Brown if he's there and Aaron Maben if he's there? Do you go for that potential or you know, quote-unquote potential, or do you go for guys who are a little more proven like a Cushing or Matthews?
Well, I mean, hearing Mike Singletary being a big proponent of the running game, I could definitely see them going after Andre Smith or Michael Orr with that pick as well.
And running back, I mean, we could see the first running back go off the board potentially here. You know, like you said, they do have Gore. He's got some injury issues. They may want to wait to the second round more so. And if you're looking for a power guy in the second round, we're talking about guys like Sean Green, Andre Brown, Rashad Jennings. They should all be there. They're another team that could be interested in Von Brace if he happens to fall to them at that spot. But like I said, that, you know, he's a guy that while we talk about a lot of these, and one of them is about to come on, Mr. Tim Jamison from Michigan, we have a lot of these defensive end slash outside linebacker type guys. The great thing about Ron Brace is he's really one of the only real nose tackles in this draft, and that's going to help his value a whole lot.
All right, just going quickly over their gains and losses with San Francisco. They didn't really lose anyone of any major consequence. I mean, Tully Bancy came with a free agent pickup last year. Didn't work out. Nose tackle Ronald Field, so they're definitely on the lookout for a big nose tackle to stuff the line. As far as additions, Damon Hewitt, Brandon Jones, Moran Norris, the fullback, and Marcus Washington, the linebacker. So that basically closes the book on San Francisco and Green Bay. Also, do not forget to go to NFLDraftBible.com for the on-the-clock segment. You can read everything right there. You can find everything that you need to know about these teams, including what Dan just ran up, the players that they might be interested in. But right now we have our next guest, and our next guest is from the University of Michigan, and he is Tim Jamison. Hey, Tim, welcome to the All Access Football Friday show.
How you guys doing?
We're doing well. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rodney Tao. We're here with Danny Morgan-Yarn, as well as Ralph Mancini.
Hey, Tim, how's it going? We have, in addition to yourself, we already had Clay Matthews on, and we're having Larry English on later. So I'm trying to get a feel for what you guys get from this whole draft process and all the talk that you hear about yourself. So let me ask you a question. When you hear the term hybrid, what kind of comes to your mind?
I think of a hybrid as a player that has the ability to either have his hand in the ground to rush the passer or has the ability to drop in coverage and guard a receiver or a running back out into the flat, whether that be a running back or a tight end. So just a player who could just an overall athlete who a coach feel is smart enough and athletic enough to able to drop in coverage plus rush the passer. So the more things a coach see a player can do, the more things he can put in his game plan. So that's what I think of when the term hybrid comes about.
And conversely, I mean, that's kind of a positive term. The other term sometimes that's thrown about is not as positive, and that's tweener. What do you think when you hear tweener?
Tweener? I would say probably like you don't know if they're like big enough to play the run, the D-line wise, I would say, or to like have the speed to stay up with like a, you know what I'm saying, a fast back or something. You know, a tweener, like you don't know where they're able to play at, where they can best fit in the defense, probably.
You know, it's interesting. You know, we talk about a lot of the different physical attributes that you might need to play and or linebacker or whatever position, but when you were talking about the, you know, having the versatility, you brought up intelligence. How important is that, you know, just being able to comprehend different schemes and to be able to be, you know, in addition to have the physical skills to be versatile, but have the mind to be able to actually do it on the field and understand two different positions?
Well, you got to understand, like, playing that drop backer position, you got to understand, like, your responsibility more than, say, like a defensive end whose job is just to get sacks and make tackles. Like a person that's dropping, you got to know, like, what receiver you're guarding, or, like, if they do some kind of formation change in the middle of the play, like, who you need to adjust to, you know, things like that.
Hey, Tim, Ralph Mancini here. You've been a pretty consistent performer throughout your collegiate career. You've had 3 seasons with at least 5 sacks. What do you attribute that consistency to?
I would say as I mature, you know, I get a better, you know, the concept of the game, and you know, just feeling more comfortable with the more I kept playing, and you know, just get consistent with it, you know, just hard work, and especially like all the different coaches I had, taking their coaching and just, you know what I'm saying, applying that to my work on the field, and, you know what I'm saying, just taking coaching and working hard.
Also, have you been doing anything out of the norm in terms of your training to enhance the added agility that you're going to need as a 3-4 linebacker that's occasionally going to drop back into coverage?
Yeah, you know, it depends on the team that chooses me to play that position. But, after the combine, because it took me by surprise when they had me do some of those drop drills at the combine. So after that was over, I worked on a lot on like dropping in coverage and things like that as I worked on my D line drills. So, you know, when I'm on pro day, it came up, I felt more comfortable in doing the same drills.
All right, Tim, we've got a question from the chat room. Do you think the Big Ten has lost some respect over these last few seasons?
Who?
The Big Ten as a conference.
I think Big Ten, the Big Ten always get a bad rap for like the outcomes in bowl games and things like that, but they do, they perform great at the next level, I think. A lot of Big Ten players. I mean, how many Big Ten players do we have in the Super Bowl? It's just like all around, I think we have great talent. It's a great conference to play in. I mean, it's physical, we beat each other up during our seasons, I don't think they get the type of respect that they need, but, I give them great respect, Big Ten.
Hey, Tim, have you kept in touch with any of your former Michigan teammates that have moved on to the NFL, guys like Sean Crable, guys like Lamar Woodley? And what are they telling you to prepare you for the next level?
Well, I talked to a lot of them. I talked to Dave Harris, Lamar Woodley, as I prepared to go to the combine. They was just telling me things like to stay focused, relax. It's a stressful environment. Don't get overwhelmed with everything that's going on around you and things like that. Encouraging words. And also stay in touch with Pierre Woods, who, he's always been like a big brother to me. So, I stayed in pretty good contact with all of them.
Now, do you think you have a little bit of advantage, like we were talking about earlier, with that whole idea of the hybrid and guys who play DN outside linebacker? Do you think you have a little bit of advantage coming out of Michigan because you did play a little bit of both positions? And, as you mentioned, the guys you just mentioned are guys who were successful coming out of Michigan doing that.
Yeah, actually, I feel very comfortable with that position, just because I had the experience and all, looking at those guys spending a lot of time with those guys, and we run the similar schemes, or we did run similar schemes at Michigan with our old coaching staff. I feel like I'm a quick learner. So it won't be a problem for me to adjust to it if it had to come up.
Hey, Tim, let me ask you. I'm a big college football guy, too. That's what we do during the year as well. What's it like being a Michigan Wolverine, going, wearing that winged helmet and going into the stadium with 108,000 people slapping that sign and just having everybody going crazy before a game?
Man, that is a great experience. I mean, the first time I jumped up and touched that banner, I mean, the crowd was just so loud. I mean, just coming out of the locker room, it's a whole experience. Just walking out that locker room, walking down the tunnel, hearing the crowd just go crazy, and then just running out there touching that banner in front of like 112,000. It's say that it only holds 107, but it's like 112 that come up in there and just go crazy, and it's just an awesome experience, man. I can't explain it. Words can't explain it.
And you talked a little bit about the Big Ten schools and bowl games, and a couple of years ago, you guys were a big underdog against Florida. And you sent your head man, Lloyd Carr, out there with a victory in his last game as a coach. How cool was that? And would you say that's your highlight of your career?
Yeah, that was obviously one of the biggest wins that I had the opportunity to play in. It was Coach Carr's last game. And for us to come in and beat him like the way we did, is I don't think they expected that, because after we beat Florida, it wasn't even enough T-shirts and hats to go around for our team and stuff like that. So it was crazy. Like, did nobody expect it? Like, we just went out there and played hard. I mean, it was a lot of hype. Like, we was hearing all the stuff as we prepared for Florida and things like that. I mean, so I'm saying they're a great team. But, like, we came together that game. That was just an awesome experience as well.
If you had to pick one thing, what would be the coolest thing? Would it be the winged helmets, the fight song, or slapping the banner?
I have to say probably jumping up, touching the banner. I enjoyed that, touching the banner. I mean, like, you don't see a lot of it, like what's going on, because so many of us jumping up, touching the banner, but that's kind of dangerous, man. I mean, we have so many ankle injuries. People touching that banner and people tripping and falling. I mean, I remember when I fell one time, and then like people didn't see it. Probably the people in the front row probably saw it, but like my teammates covered it up. But you got to be careful touching that butter. It's crazy. But, like, I have to say I enjoyed that part the most. I mean, all of it's great, though.
All right, Tim. Well, before we let you get out of here, we've got a segment we call Three and Out, all right? Three quick questions for you. All right, I'm going to lead it off on first down. The last concert you've been to.
The last concert I've been to is the Janet Jackson concert, Auburn Hills.
Okay.
All right. second down, Tim. Tell us your favorite superhero of all time.
Favorite superhero of all time. I have to be Batman.
Nice. Good choice.
All right. Although there's some debate whether Batman is a superhero, but we'll give it to you. third down, if you could beat any offensive tackle for a sack and, you know, you kind of feel like, hey, I made it, I beat so-and-so, who would you want to beat?
Orlando Pace.
All right, good choice.
Okay, you'll get your shot.
And he's a Buckeye, too. Is that a coincidence?
Yeah, you know.
All right, Tim, thank you very much for joining us and giving us some of your time. And we look forward to seeing you on Sundays, and good luck in the draft and your professional career.
Thanks, fellas. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. That's the big DN, Tim Jamison. And in my view, he's a DN. I don't know why they want to make everyone a linebacker. You know, if somebody has to play the DN, everyone's not playing a 3-4. Am I wrong here?
He's not a lightweight. I mean, he's a guy that's about 265 pounds. So, I mean, he can go either way. I mean, if he wants to become that linebacker, you know, he'd probably need to shed about 20 pounds or so. Whereas it might not be that difficult for him to become that defensive end in terms of size. He could just put on about 10 pounds, and he can be a typical 4-3 defensive end. It all depends on where he ends up.
Okay, well, our next guest is a guy who knows a little something about this topic we just talked about, and that's going to be Larry English, the outside linebacker or the defensive end from Northern Illinois. Larry, thank you for joining us on the All Access Football Friday show.
How you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Okay, I'm Rodney Tal. We have Daniel Molignon and Ralph Mancini.
Hey, Larry, we've been kicking all you guys off. You're the third guy we're having on, and it's a linebacker show, but ironically, it's been all guys who have kind of played a lot of D-end in college. So let me ask you, when you hear the term hybrid, what do you think of? What kind of comes to mind?
I think of a athletic football player, a guy that can both play the linebacker position and drop back in coverage, but also can rush the pass. So I think there's a premium on players that can do both of those things because it's kind of hard to find guys that have that much athletic ability, like I said, to do both.
And conversely, how about the term tweener? When you hear that, what kind of comes to mind?
You know, tweener, I think, you know, in some people's eyes, it's kind of the same type of thing. I don't know if tweener is the negative version of hybrid, almost can't find a position for the guy. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I think that, you know, both of the terms, you know, I think at the end of the day, the football players that can play football and, you know, I think in some cases, you know, the size isn't as much as of an issue that some people might think.
Now, let me ask you. I mean, I'm pretty sure you played mostly D-end in your college career. I mean, is this something that you thought about, you know, yourself, like, hey, I think I could do this, or is it more something that other people are saying we think your skills kind of translate?
No, I've always known that I have the ability to do it. I mean, I started as a linebacker in high school. My whole high school career, I played linebacker, and then really was recruited as a linebacker by, you know, most of the schools that I was getting looked at by. And, you know, it just so happened that in Northern Illinois, the DN's coach wanted to see me rushing the passer, and I was able to do it. And, you know, they moved me to DN, and, you know, it did work for me. I think that with that said, I can play both. You know, I don't think that, you know, I would have a problem standing up and playing in the two-point. And obviously, I think everybody knows that I can play defensive end also.
Hey, Larry, Ralph Mancini. What would you say is your greatest strength? Would it be your run defense, your pass defense, tackling, your pass rushing ability? What would you say is your greatest strength? And also, what is the most underrated part of your game?
I think my greatest strength is, you know, being able to rush the passer, because, you know, it's just not that many players that can do it. Not everybody can do it. But also, I think that a lot of times with guys that can rush the passer, and especially if you're undersized, you kind of automatically get thrown into the bucket of guys that don't play the run. And with the case, and with me, that's not the case. You know, I take pride in playing the run, and I do a good job of playing the run. So I think that would have to be the most underrated thing, because, and I think, you know, when people do sit down and actually look at the tape, they find out that I do both.
Also, Larry, you have a reputation of being someone who's rarely fooled by offensive schemes. How do you prepare for next week's opponent, and how many hours do you actually put in when it comes to film study? How many hours of film study do you put in during any given week?
You know what, I don't know if I can exactly put a number on it, but it is always important, you know, your preparation for the offense that you're getting ready to play against, from the standpoint of watching a tackle, trying to find little clues, little things in his game that you know that you can defeat, what you know you're going to be able to basically how you know that you're going to be able to have a leg up on him. So from that standpoint, it's important to watch the offensive tape of the team that you're getting ready to play, and also from the standpoint of what kind of schemes they run. You know, I think the more tape you watch, the more familiar you get with that offense, and that's just a huge part of your preparation, because on Saturdays or Sundays or what have you, you know, it becomes second nature.
And Larry, also I wanted to ask you, what's your current weight, and are you afraid of bulking up too much and losing some of your speed and quickness?
My current weight is 255, and, you know, I'm not afraid of bulking up and, you know, losing quickness. Whatever team that I go with, whatever weight they want me to play at, I can play at. I've been heavier than this, and, you know, I felt comfortable and felt fine. 255 is just kind of naturally where I fall, but at the same time, I've been up to about 262.
Larry, you've gone through the combine process. You've done all the drills. Now, the big one that we're always talking about is the 40-yard dash. All right, what does that mean to you? Do you think we overhype that particular drill?
In some cases, yeah, I think, you know, the 40-yard dash is overhyped, because a lot of it is so technical. And, you know, if you can find a guy that has great technique in getting down in a 40 start, you know, in a track stance, and coming off a track stance and running that straight line, he can run a great time. Is he necessarily going to be a great football player? Are all great track athletes great football players? No, that's not the case. You know, I think what's more important is looking at a player's tape. You know, looking at the game film, looking at is this a guy that plays fast? Does he run around fast? Is he running? Yeah, I feel that if a guy is on the football field and on tape is running players down 40 yards down the field, I think that says more about a football player's game than, you know, a number.
Hey, Larry, let me pick your brain for a second here. You coming out of the MAC, and the MAC was a pretty strong conference last year. You went up against a lot of tough quarterbacks, including Nate Davis, Dan LeFever, Tim Hiller. Who was the toughest quarterback you guys faced last year?
I'd have to say it was Nate Davis. You know, he was, you know, just the arm strength, you know, the instincts. I don't think he's a smart football player. He was a good one. He would probably have to be the toughest. But with that said, you know, there was a lot of other guys that were good too. Dan LeFever, you know, I've been playing against him for, I think, 3 years now. So it's always tough playing against him with that run pass combo also. So.
And who is the, out of those guys, or you can throw somebody else if they deserve to be there, who is the toughest to bring down?
I probably.
Or did you bring them all down with ease?
Well, if I get to them, I'm bringing them down. LeFever keeps you on your toes, you know, just because you know he can tuck the ball at any second and run. He's got a good ability to run the ball, and he has really good instincts of feeling where pass rush is coming from. So you know, I would have to say him, you know, just with the ability to run and pass.
All right, Larry, have you done any private workouts for any NFL teams thus far, and do you have any scheduled?
No, not yet. I do have some scheduled, but I haven't had any yet because I'm waiting until after my pro day to do my individual workouts. So.
Okay, and as you are basically, you're at a crossroads, basically you're leaving college, get ready to join the professional ranks. What are you going to miss most about college, and what do you look forward to in the pros?
I think, you know, definitely the thing I miss most about college is the relationships, you know, you build over the years with people, coaches, and with teammates. You know, that's the biggest thing that, you know, I'm going to miss personally. But with that said, I'm definitely ready and looking forward to moving on to the next level. It's just that time for me. You know, it's time for me to move on. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to being able to go out every Sunday and compete against the best, and also throughout the week preparing, you know. And I think if you got the right mindset, you know, you can help yourself out in a lot of ways and become a good football player, and that's what I plan to do.
Okay, well, Larry, thank you for joining us. But before we let you get out of here, we call this three and out. First down, three questions real quick. First question is going to be, on a typical Saturday night, where is Larry English?
Usually probably watching a game, whether it's football, basketball. You know, I'm a sports junkie, so I love to watch a game, you know, with friends and things like that, so probably watching a game.
Well, second down, Larry, since you are such a sports junkie, if you had to be an athlete in any sport, any other athlete for one day, who would it be?
I'll probably say LeBron James. You know, I had a history. I played basketball growing up and all through high school, and, you know, just his ability to dominate a basketball game, you know, with his athletic ability and, you know, his ability to take over whenever he wants, I'd probably say LeBron James.
All right, Larry, third down. We're going to have you on again because I love talking to sports junkies. So third down. And since you're bringing up hoops, who's going to win the NCAA tournament? It's March Madness. Who you got?
Pittsburgh.
Ooh, they almost lost today, man. They barely survived.
I know, but that's going to make them hungry.
All right. Okay. It works that way sometimes. It's true.
We remember you said that there, Larry.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate that. And we look forward to seeing you as well on Sunday. And good luck moving forward through the draft and your professional career.
All right, appreciate it. Take care, guys.
Thank you. That's Larry English, the DE/O linebacker from Northern Illinois. I mean, it's going to be really curious to see where these guys fit in at the next level.
It's always good to talk a little English.
when did you think of that one? Was it immediately when you were coming on, or did it just hit you at the moment? You know?
He looked a little anxious. I should know. He looked a little anxious. He was ready to talk.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting thing, and it's a little bit of a crapshoot sometimes. You know, we've talked about this, you know, before, how you are projecting. You don't really know what they can do until they actually do it. But if you're a 34 defensive team, and we're seeing more and more teams go to that defense, I know Denver switching to it. We talked about Green Bay switching to it. So I think this year, more than I can remember, we're going to have teams playing this 34 defense. You kind of have to, because there's not that many teams that play it at the college level. So you're going to have to project to some extent to get those guys. And the teams that do a better job of that, like the Steelers, projecting a defensive end like Woodley to an outside linebacker, those are the teams that are going to end up being more successful.
Well, you know, as far as English goes, I think he hit the nail right on the head. His best strength is rushing the passer, and that is one thing that he can definitely do. And, you know, to me, I think that if they use him in the right way, and he also is strong versus the run as well. So I like his chances. And, you know, if it's any 3-4 team out there that's worried about how Larry English is going to project as an NFL pro, I wouldn't be worried, because at the very least, you know that he has the weight, he has the size, he can rush the passer, and he's pretty stout versus the run as well.
Okay, we have our next guest, We hope. We hope it's the outstanding linebacker from the Cincinnati Bengals by way of the USC Trojans, Keith Rivers. Keith, is that you?
Yeah, hey, what's going on?
Okay, I'm glad I guessed that one right because Switchboard doesn't tell us who's calling. Sorry we missed you last week, but we're glad that you're here this week. Now, your rookie year, how was that in the NFL? Anything surprised you? I mean, I understand that you were, because of an injury, was cut short. But anything surprised you? Anything that basically, what surprised you about going to the next level?
I mean, it's just, you know, what every guy says, you know, it's more so of a job, you know. For me on Thursdays, it's like Office Space, the movie is Case of the Mondays. Well, I had a case of the Thursdays. I'd be in for workouts at, you know, I wake up at 6:15, go to workout at 6:45, and then not be done till 7 o'clock at night, you know. So a little bit of a 12-hour day there, you know. So, I mean, you know, that's the main thing. But, you know, as far as ball and everything like that, you know, when you play at a high level, you know, with a great coach like Coach Carroll, Coach Norton, I mean, you kind of come, you're accustomed, and you're able to mix in and fall into the mix fairly seemingly. But it's just different, man. It's work.
Hey, Keith, this is Dan. I got to throw this out there. I think it's even a bigger adjustment for guys like USC, right? I mean, you're coming from, you know, you got a great players coach in Pete Carroll. You're coming from sunny California. You got the girls on the beaches. You got the celebrities coming in, right? I mean, you guys are living it up out there in USC.
Yeah, it's definitely a culture shock when you get out there. But, you know, it's, you know, Cincinnati is a great place in itself. And, you know, at the end of the day, like if there's a football team in L.A., I mean, it's just, I mean, you couldn't do any of the things, you know, that L.A. brings just to get to enjoy the weather. So, you know, it's working, you know, that's how you got to, yeah, you got the mentality. You got to go to work, put your hard hat on, and, you know, and grind it out for, you know, like Thursdays, 12 hours.
Hey, Keith, let me ask you this. There's been talk, now is when the teams, the league are they're having meetings and stuff and talking about different rules, changes, and one of the things that came up was they were talking about the hit where you got injured by Hines Ward, and they were discussing the possibility of making a rule where, you know, you can't hit a guy high on a blindside hit. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, that's kind of a sore subject. It is what it is. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you got any place to hit, but it hit somebody, you know, and, you know, this game's only so long. You know, the average lifespan is 3 years, and, you know, I've already lost half a year due to a hit like that. But at the end of the day, you know, it is football, and, you know, just gotta keep, you know, keep your head on the swivel and, you know, stay, you know, just stay looking for that type of stuff, the blindside type of stuff like that.
Well, let me ask you, if you had a vote, would you vote for that type of rule?
I mean, I don't know. You know, that's up to the guys who have the vote. You know, they get the opportunity to do that. You know, whatever happens, happens. But, you know, just for me in the future, you know, just got to be more wise and, you know when you got a guy who's going to do something like that. You know, 90% of guys in the league don't do stuff like that, but, you know. When you got a guy like that, you got to kind of look out.
I got what you're saying.
Hey, Keith, Ralph Mancini here. Looking at your Cincinnati team out there, especially on defense, they made some strides towards the end of the season. They've held your defense has held the Eagles to 13 points, the Redskins to 13 points. You shut out the Browns, and you held the Kansas City Chiefs to 6 points. You had Mike Zimmer there as your defensive coordinator in his first year. What has been a key factor in the defense's improvement, in your opinion?
You know, it's just, you know, we just kept plugging at it. You know, Coach Lewis had a thing saying, just keep your head to the grindstone. You know, one day that rock will break. And, you know, we're in the lower half of the league, you know, ranked 12th defensively. And, you know, that number's only going to jump up this upcoming year. So, you know, we just kept working, kept believing. You know, just control what we can control, and that's the end of our pass defense.
I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but one thing that Mike Zimmer preaches is aggressiveness on defense, and you were a more aggressive unit last year. But where were the sacks, though? I mean, you only had 17 sacks. Why couldn't your team be more productive in that area?
Yeah, you know, the sacks were, you know, we didn't get as many sacks. It was a little tough, and, you know, that kind of kept us on the field. a little bit, but things happen. Hopefully this year we're a little bit more productive in that area. But it's just something we got to keep working on. Rome wasn't built in a day, and the Bengals defense, Bengals being the top defense in the league, is not going to be built in a day. We've made strides to get there, but we got to keep working.
Also, Keith, you do have quite a few young players on that defense, guys that could really take off in the next year or two. Could you tell us about maybe one of your teammates that you think is ready to take it to the next level?
And you can't say yourself. You gotta pick somebody else.
There's a ton of guys. I would hate to single anybody out. Guys have just done an excellent job. Guys like Fosse Rucker, Dehani Jones, they've just done a great job, and they continue to do great jobs. The DBs have done stellar, and we're going to continue to build on what we did last year and try to maximize that and get to the under single digits, into the single digits as in the defensive rankings.
So let me ask you. You brought up Dehani Jones. Have you watched his show?
Oh yeah, I have watched his show. Me and Dehani have a little rivalry going on. Us both being linebackers, and I like to tell him when he's on his first workout, I'm on my second workout. While he's doing a TV show out and he's tackling the globe, I'm getting ready to tackle football players.
I'm sure you're also reminding him of some of the Rose Bowl scores between USC and Michigan too, right?
Always him and Leon.
Let's stay with USC for a second. We have a poll question on our website, NFLDraftBible.com, and the question is for the fans out there, and it asks, which USC linebacker will be the best pro, Ray Maluga, Brian Cushing, or Clay Matthews Jr.? If the computer was in front of you right now, where would you click?
Come on, man. We won't tell
anybody. You know, I can't say that. All those guys are excellent football players, and they're going to be dominate next year. In the NFL, they all have different attributes, and as we all know, that all depends on what scheme you go into and what system you go to.
Well, let me ask you about Clay specifically. Then everybody knew about Cushing and Maluga heading into the year; those guys are all projected as first round picks. You started with them the last 2-3 years, before this year.
Mm-hmm.
Did Matthew surprise you at all? How far he shot up?
No, that was my roommate for the last 3 years. So, I know what kind of hard work he's taken. He's just been so strict in his diet and just how hungry he's been to get to the level that he's at. And now he's going to be a first-round draft pick, and I couldn't be any more elated for him.
All right, Keith, do you hear from these guys throughout this combine process and where the draft process stands right now? Are you hearing from them now?
Yeah, I talk to the guys all the time. Me and Thomas Williams, we try to give them advice from the experience that we went through and just how to take the process.
Shifting back to the NFL, Keith, what's the public sentiment been there in Cincinnati? Quite frankly, your team's been disappointing the past few years. Do you sense that, fans are optimistic? Do you feel that they're frustrated? What are the fans saying out there?
People are frustrated. 4-11-1 is frustrating, but you have to realize that we finished the season on the upside, and we have a young nucleus and we have a lot of stuff to build on. Defense is great, and we're missing some key ingredients. Three-time Pro Bowler and Carson Palmer, so. Those are just some things to digest, and they know that. The Cincinnati fans are very smart fans. They know what kind of team we have when we have Carson and now we have a pretty decent defense, and that's only going to get better to become one of the better defenses in the league. So I think there's a sense of optimism and hope that this year we can hopefully turn the corner.
And what's the latest with Carson Palmer since you mentioned him? How's he doing in his recovery?
That I know of, he's doing. He's great, and he's getting back to 100%, and be ready to go.
All right.
In this business, you guys know more than I do.
I don't think so, Keith, but thanks for that compliment. All right, Keith, before we let you go now, we do something called three and out. We're just going to ask you three quick questions. And the first down is going to be, who is your favorite athlete of all time in any sport?
Athlete of all time in any sport? That's a tough one. I got a time frame? Because I might be saying all night.
Well, who did you have a poster up of when you were a kid?
I didn't, because I wanted to be greater than whoever was the best. But let's just say Jesse Owens. I don't know.
Okay. Great historical pick there, Keith.
Well, hey, second down. I mean, I imagine you're a baseball fan. It's spring training out there. We're all looking forward to, while pitchers and catchers has come, all looking forward to the beginning of the season. Who is your favorite baseball player of all time?
My favorite baseball player, even though he had a down year, is one of my good buddies, Barry Zito. He had a bad year. He's coming back strong this year, though. I promise.
He plays a mean guitar, too.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
I said he plays a mean guitar also.
Oh, yeah, he does. Yeah, he's out there.
All right, Keith, we're going to get you out with this third down question. You didn't want to tell me who was the best player among those linebackers, so tell me who's got the best hair, Cushing, Maluga, or Clay Matthews Jr.? Who's got the best hair?
Man, you got another tough one there. I'm gonna go with my roommate Clay because I remember him talking to his mom like about leaving conditioners and stuff like that. So I'm gonna go with Clay.
Oh, he's really gonna like that one, Nick. Hey, Keith, thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate you giving us that time. All right, and
we
know we'll see you next Sunday on Sundays. I should say.
Already.
We wish you all the success in the world, Nick Keith.
All right, have a good one.
All right, thanks, Keith.
Keith Rivers, outstanding rookie linebacker from Cincinnati Bengals. Excuse me, second-year linebacker from Cincinnati. Sounds like he's ready to go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that speaks to the fact that, the Cincinnati defense finished strong without him. If they can bring him in to the fold and he can be the kind of player they think he could be, hey, suddenly that it's weird how this happens in the NFL, how quickly, a team that has been such an offensive team and terrible defensively suddenly maybe is coming up on the other side of the ball.
Well, sooner or later, when you pick high in the draft and you do bring in these defensive players, sooner or later, I mean, some of these guys are going to pan out. And we did bring up last week the fact that they did bring in a lot of defensive tackles. So they're actually pretty deep at that position. And if they do decide to go with a B.J. Raji, if he's there in the first round, well, that makes it even stronger. And that's only going to help Keith Rivers because it's going to allow him to roam. It's going to create more space for him to go from sideline to sideline and make plays. So, the arrow is pointing up in Cincinnati as far as their defense goes right now.
And like those big boys at the front, I mean, how often do we talk? I know it's a cliche, but basically the game is won on the line of scrimmage. If you can dominate on either side, defensively or offensively, you're gonna make some hay. Because if you have the defensive tackles who can tie up blockers, hey, that frees your linebackers up to run and make plays. So that's the beauty about the NFL. As much as we love the skill plays, the line is still decided. The game is still decided on the line of scrimmage. Now, whether we want to accept that or not. I love watching a 50-yard bomb as much as the next guy. But every now and again, watch what's happening on that line because those big boys earn their money every week, every play. All right, next up, we're going to go to our draft spotlight. And what position by chance do you think we're going to talk about today? We've had none of the linebackers on. Let's stay with that linebacker thing. All right, gentlemen, the poll question was, which USC linebacker will make the best pro? Ray Maluga, Brian Cushing, or Clay Matthews Jr.? The last results that were checked, 59 said Maluga, 41 said Matthews, and bringing it up in the rear is Brian Cushing at 38. So Matthews, in some of you guys' minds, has surpassed Brian Cushing, which is somewhat surprising to me based on where they started.
Yeah, a little bit, but, he's the rising guy right now, and, if you ask me a similar question and which guy would go higher, I think right now it's a toss-up for all three guys. I think these guys are so close, it depends on team need and, to some extent, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I think they're pretty close. I think if I went with my head, I'd go with Mr. Ray Maluga. If I went with my heart, I'd go with Brian Cushing. If I went with something else, I'd go with Clay Matthews. So I'm going to go with Maluga. I've been a Maluga guy from the beginning. I love all three of these guys, but I'll just go with Maluga. I think he's going to be a beast at inside linebacker at over 250-plus pounds. He's just a hitting machine, not a tackling machine, a hitting machine, so instinctive, a big-time playmaker. But really, all three of these guys, they can play on my team.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with Clay Matthews Jr. just because of his upside and his great competitiveness. I mean, just think about it. This is a kid. This is a kid who was in an affluent environment growing up. I mean, you know, he was the son of an NFL player. He wasn't some poor kid living in the ghetto somewhere. I mean, and just to go in as a walk-on for USC and to fight and scratch his way, playing on special teams and really earning that starting spot finally in his senior year. I mean, that's something that's amazing, you know. So I love his competitiveness. I love the fact that, you know, he's got good lateral agility. He attacks the line of scrimmage. He's quick off the snap. Good bloodlines, as we mentioned. I think he's got the greatest upside. I'm going to go with Clay Matthews Jr.
Hey, can I just jump in for a second? Because I had to text Clay and let him know that Keith Rivers outed him in terms of the conditioner. And Clay said, look good, feel good, play good. So it's all part of the scheme.
Okay, gentlemen, now. Okay, we've talked about the USC linebackers. Now, there are other linebackers who play for other teams. All right. So who are some of these top non-USC linebackers?
Well, I think, you know, right away you got to go with the guy who could be the top player regardless of position, and that's Mr. Aaron Curry, the outside linebacker from Wake Forest. And he's starting to say, hey, I could play in the middle too. You got Sims, you got Julian Peterson. Take me number one. I'll play the mic. I can do it all. So I think he's just a solid all-around guy. I mean, you know, a couple other names out there. Marcus Freeman, I know, is a guy Ralph likes. He's a little less versatile. The thing that bothers me a little bit is people focus on the fact that, well, he can only be a weak side linebacker in a 4-3 defense. I mean, that's okay, but we know this. He could play three downs because he can cover. That's something we don't know about a lot of other guys. So he may be limited to some extent, but I think his value is expanded because he's a three-down player.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you on both counts, on both players. Aaron Curry arguably is the most complete linebacker in the draft. He's explosive. He's a big play athlete. And then as far as Marcus Freeman goes, yeah, he's a little light, maybe about 230, 235, but he's athletic. He can also make some plays at the line of scrimmage. He's a reliable open field tackler in addition to being a guy that can provide some good coverage. So I like Marcus Freeman, and I think he's going to be a player.
And, I think some other guys there, obviously, when you go, let's throw Ty McKenzie's name out there. He's another versatile outside
yes.
linebacker that's a pretty good cover man, as is Darry Beckwith, who's a middle linebacker. But some people think he can play in the outside, and that's part of the reason. He's got really good cover skills, the kid out of LSU. A couple of more inside guys. I'll leave Mr. Laurinaitis to you, Ralph, to watch for. I think Gerald McGrath, the kid out of Southern Miss, is coming up the boards. He's showing better speed than people had anticipated. And then you got Donnell Ellerbe, the kid out of Georgia, who we had highly ranked. Rough senior season, injuries are a concern, durability is a concern. But I think if he could stay healthy, I don't see why he can't be a starter as a mic linebacker at the next level.
Yeah, well, as far as James Laurinaitis goes, you know, this is a guy that he might not be the best athlete out there among linebackers, but you have to love his on-field production. Has top-notch instincts. He anticipates plays, can take on and shed blocks at 6'2", 240 pounds. And I also think that he's agile enough to play in coverage, but his best asset is tackling. And look, when you're talking about linebackers, to me, they have to know how to tackle. This is a guy that knows how to wrap his arms around ball carriers. Great technique, excellent pursuit. I like James Laurinaitis a lot. And as far as, you know, getting back to Darry Beckwith from LSU.
Oh, I know Ralph likes Darry Beckwith.
I every time I watch this guy on TV, he always does something to impress me. Yeah, he might not be the biggest guy, maybe about 230 pounds, but he does have the frame to add more weight. Plus, you love his aggressiveness, you love the fact that he's physical, and despite being a little bit on the smaller side, he takes on blockers And, you know, he stands his ground against the running game. The one negative about Gary Beckwith is he's a bit injury prone. He has battled some knee injuries. That's the one thing you need to watch out with him. Watch out for it with him, I should say.
Okay, well, got it. All right, now let's get to specific. This 3-4 is huge. We've talked about it, you know, ad nauseum on this show in particular. But who are some of these guys that fit best in that scheme?
Well, I'll start off with the inside guys then, since we focus a lot on the outside guys already. A couple of guys, Scott McKillop, who we've had on, and I believe we're going to have on one of the shows again next week. He was thinking of coming on with us tonight, but then he got tickets to a Penguins game, so he went out there. He's a Western PA native kid. He's got good size, not the fastest kid, but very instinctive. He does something Ralph loves. He's a short tackler. He doesn't necessarily go for the big hit all the time, but he makes the play that needs to be made. I think another kid who bulked up and put up some size was Warrell Williams out of California. And he's a guy that has some experience playing 34 because Cal switched to that defense last year at the college level, and he's another big kid. And then you got Jasper Brinkley, you know, who's a monster at the college level. At one point, around 270 pounds or so. I believe he's in the 250s right now. But all three of these guys are instinctive players. They're intelligent players. They're renowned as being leaders of their units. And they all kind of lack that explosive speed, that 40 time. But when you play in the 3-4, you don't need to cover as much ground as a Mike does. There's two of you in the middle, not just one. So you don't necessarily need to have as much sideline to sideline speed, but you need to have that size to engage with the offensive line a little more.
Yeah, and I love Jasper Brinkley. You're talking about a guy who's about 265 pounds. Can you say LeVon Kirkland? I mean, that's the guy. That's the guy he reminds me of. He's an intimidator, a true thumper who packs a punch and run support. Could provide a little bit of pass rushing as well. You know, the one thing that you have to worry about with him, you know, he wasn't the same player in 2008 due to an ACL tear the year before. But this is a guy I would definitely take a gamble on. And then, as Dan mentioned, Scott McKillop, nothing sexy about him. He's not exceptionally fast. Doesn't get off the blocks well, but he's basically an instinctual inside linebacker with good awareness, a short tackler. And Warrell Williams, he's the player that I'm not really that sure about. He doesn't really convince me as much as the other two players I mentioned before. He does have great athletic skills, only about 5'10", but to me, he could be a guy that might maybe a better athlete than actual player. A lot of times is over-aggressive and tends to be out of position, and he bites on a lot of play-action plays. So Warrell Williams, great athletic skills, but as a football player, I'm not so convinced that he's going to be a standout player at the next level.
Yeah, and as far as the outside guys, I mean, we've already talked, like Rodney said, we've already talked a lot about most of these guys, the Arakpos, the Browns, the Mabins. Let's throw in another Brown there, Cody Brown out of Connecticut is another player and a real intriguing guy. If you really want to go boom or bust, you want to go pure upside and really go out there, that's Connor Barwin, a really impressive athlete. And he's a kid that's barely a defensive end switching to – he's barely a defensive player. I mean, he played tight end most of his career in Cincinnati. They throw him out there in defensive end. He goes out and gets 10 sacks, which is pretty impressive and extremely athletic. But, I mean, you know, there's very little tape for him as a defender in general. And, you know, they couldn't have thrown out a lot at him, being that he was just playing on that side of the ball. So he was basically just a get-after-the-quarterback type guy, which, hey, I'm not going to downplay that skill. That's a heck of a skill if you could do it.
Yeah, well, Connor Barwin is definitely somebody that knows how to play along the line of scrimmage. He can hold up his man, and he can disengage from his blocker to get to the ball. The one thing about him is that I question is his tackling ability. He's not an explosive guy in that regard, and he's not a fierce hitter. But he does have a great work ethic. He's got a great motor. And a lot of people seem to compare him to Mike Vrabel. So if he even comes close to being that type of player, then this is a guy that you want on your team.
Okay, guys, now we've talked about the name guys. Now give me some of your sleepers.
Well, let's start with, you know, definitely an NFL Draft Bible favorite, and that's Franz Joseph, who fits into a similar mold as these previous players that we discussed at the inside linebacker position. Not the fastest kid, but good bulk, aggressive. He's not afraid to bring it. A very short tackler, And I've seen him play, and to me, he looks like he could stay on the field three downs as well. And I know he's going to be visiting with the Miami Dolphins later in the month. So actually in April, I should say. And I think he's an ideal fit for a team like that that's running a 3-4 scheme.
Yeah, I'll give you two guys. Number one, Zach Follett. I mean, this guy is a savage hitter. He plays hard on every down. I mean, this guy's got the mentality to be that big run-stuffing, intimidating inside linebacker that you're looking for. And I'll give you another guy, more of a deep sleeper, and that's Antonio Appleby from Virginia, 6'2", another guy with size, 260 pounds. Brinkley Light here we're talking about. He's thick. He's powerful. He doesn't get pushed back. He slides off of blocks very well, and he hits with a real pop. Hey, look, he doesn't have the speed to flow to the flanks, to the outside, but as a run stuffer, as a guy with some size, with some thump, I like Antonio Appleby as one of my sleepers at the linebacker position.
Okay, guys, we're gonna go to school now on the linebackers. And first off, we're going to the pros. This is NFL Draft Bible, right? All right, greater than Pittsburgh linebacker sacks or less than Dallas linebacker sacks?
I don't know why, but I'm going to go Pittsburgh linebacker sacks are going to be less than Dallas linebacker sacks. I'm going to go with DeMarcus Ware leading the way. Last year, you saw guys like Brady James emerge, and Greg Ellis, I think, maybe has one more year in him emerging as a sack guy. So led by DeMarcus Ware, who I think is at the peak of his game right now, I'm going to lean towards Dallas. It's a little bit of a risky pick going against the Pittsburgh Steelers and what they could do, but I don't think this necessarily means they're a better unit, but I think the Dallas core, particularly that linebacking core, getting sacks, getting to the quarterback, that's what they do best.
I'm going to go with the Steelers here just because I'm going to go with the strength in numbers, and I think that the Steelers have more linebackers. They have more guys that can get to the quarterback than the Dallas Cowboys do. You're talking about James Harrison, Lamar Woodley, Larry Foote, James Farrier. These are all very talented guys. And then, you know, they have a guy that they picked as a rookie last year, Bruce Davis. Who knows? Maybe he could emerge this year as well. So I'm going to go with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have that tradition of developing linebackers. And, you know, year in and year out, you know, it seems like for the past 10, 15 years, they always have these star linebackers on their team. I don't think it's a coincidence. And I'm going to go with Pittsburgh here.
And remember, Lawrence Timmons is still not a full-time player just yet for Pittsburgh. All right? But true or false? Same with Pittsburgh. James Harrison will be the best linebacker in 2009.
I'm going to say false here because of a guy that Dan just brought up before, and his name is DeMarcus Ware. You know, as a pass rusher, DeMarcus Ware is just unstoppable. Just keeps getting better year in and year out, game in and game out. Look, James Harrison's a terrific player, but he's surrounded by a lot of talent on that team. So maybe this is the year in Pittsburgh where Woodley steps up as the best linebacker or another one of their young studs over on defense. Whereas with DeMarcus Ware, I think this guy's going to be good for the next 10 years, providing he stays healthy. So I'm going to say false to that one.
I'm going to say false as well. I mean, he may have been the best linebacker in 2008 and as well as in the actual Super Bowl, but I think, you know, this might be the best season he's going to have in his career, and I'm going to say false. But I will say, if I have to pick somebody, I'm going to go with a little more of an emerging guy, and Patrick Willis out of San Francisco. I think he's kind of ready with Mike Singletary as the head man to kind of step up to being one of the marquee, if not the marquee linebackers in the NFL. I love this guy coming out of school. They got a steal when they were able to get him at around 9-10 when they drafted him. I think he's ready to start a big run of Pro Bowls.
And I'll give you another emerging guy, and that's John Beeson from the Carolina Panthers. I mean, this kid is all over the place, sideline to sideline, just keeps on racking up the tackles. This guy is the true team leader on that defense.
Okay, guys, now it's time to fill in the blank. Blank is the best linebacker I've ever seen.
Not even close, in my opinion. Not even close. Lawrence Taylor, LT. The best football player I've ever seen. I don't care what position you want to talk about. This guy was a beast. He just controlled the football field. He redefined a position. He didn't only redefine his position. He redefined what a left tackle is.
He changed the game.
He changed the game. He redefined other positions all over the place. The ultimate make your teammates better, make the guys around you better, because he's getting double, triple teamed every day. I mean, listen, hey, he's not the kind of guy you want your daughter to bring home, that's for sure. But on the football field, if I'm picking teams, he's my first pick every time.
And don't you think down the road he created some opportunities for those tweeners, for those hybrid players
that
you're talking about? You know, where would a guy like a Cushing or like a Matthews Jr. be without LT there? You know, so I think he definitely was a guy that made a difference in how the game is played. When I had to answer this question, to me it came down to three players that I enjoyed watching growing up and presently as well. And it came down to Derek Thomas, Lawrence Taylor, and Ray Lewis. And I'm going to go with Ray Lewis here. You know, LT was one of a kind, a superior athlete. But when I take a look, when I analyze a guy like Ray Lewis, he not only does it on the field, he not only contributes individually with his skills, but he gets the best out of his fellow players. He gets the best out of his team. He's a coach on the field. He's an inspirational leader. That's why I'm going to go with Ray Lewis. He leads by example, and that's one thing that Lawrence Taylor didn't do. So I'm going to go with Big 52 over on the Baltimore Ravens.
Now, I mean, I contemplated this question. That was a tough one for me as well. I mean, but at the end of the day, I have to go with versatility, and Ray Lewis had one of the greatest seasons I've ever seen a linebacker have in that Ravens Super Bowl season. I mean, that Super Bowl, the man was all over the field. So as much as it pains me, I must go Ray Lewis
by a nudge. Where's Ross Mandel when we need him?
By a nudge over Lawrence Taylor. Just because Lawrence Taylor was pretty much the greatest pass rusher. As a linebacker, the greatest pass rusher is easy LT. Even though he did more than that. I don't want to say he was one-dimensional. But Ray Lewis did everything so well. And he is the leadership part cannot be underrated.
And just to put a close on this, I like the fact that Lewis just got the most out of his ability. And the guy just works harder than everybody else. And he wants it more than everybody else. Whereas with Lawrence Taylor, I think he could have been so much more of a better player if he would have kept his nose clean. If it would
you
have
think he underachieved?
I don't think he underachieved. I'm just telling you, the guy could have been even better than he was. If you can imagine that. Yeah.
I don't think I can imagine that.
I can't.
Now, that is mind-boggling. Once you sit back and recognize his history, he'll tell you he didn't really work out as much as some of the other guys. He didn't work as hard. This stuff just came naturally.
He never lifted any weights.
Yes.
Can you believe that? This guy never lifted any weights, and he was as dominating as he was. So I think he could have been even better.
No, I honestly don't disagree with you, all right? But let's go with the best linebacker from the 2008 draft class, gentlemen.
2008 class, this is a tough one here. I'm going to go with the kid out of the New England Patriots there, Gerard Mayo, considering that he made such a big impact in his first year. A guy, we talk about versatility all the time. Well, this guy offers that in spades. I think he's going to be a Pro Bowl player for years to come.
I don't disagree, Ralph. I'm going to go with Mr. Mayo as well out of Tennessee. I think a similar value pick late in the top 10, just like Patrick Willis the year before. He's an emerging guy, could kind of do it all. And to me, it's kind of an easy pick because I really, looking back at last year's class, I don't think it was really that strong of a linebacker class, and he's kind of jumped out into the lead, and I'm not really sure there's anybody there who can catch him in terms of being an impact player at the next level.
All right, guys.
I believe we had him picked as the defensive rookie of the year. The show after the draft, we talked about him already being the defensive rookie of the year. Just a little pat on the back of the NFL Draft Bible and a reason for people to go to the website and check out our rankings right there.
Okay, and right now Aaron Curry's sitting on top there, another linebacker. All right, once again, don't forget to do that. The NFL Draft Bible, the big board is up. Check it out and let us know what you think. All right, guys, the last question on the linebackers. All right, multiple choice, the best unit. The Pats, meaning the Patriots, the Jets, the Steelers, the Ravens, or the Bears?
I'm going to go with the Steelers here. I'm going to go with Chalk and the favorite team because I just think they're so versatile. They have more depth than other teams, and they have guys who are up and coming. So not only do they have the veteran guys that have done it for a few years, I think, you know, they have the up and coming. See, I think the Pats veteran guys are not as good as they used to be. I don't see the Ravens with the younger players like a Woodley, like a Timmons, who did have 5 sacks last year playing inside a new position. So I'm going to go with the Steelers as an overall unit.
I can't disagree. Pittsburgh is a linebacker factory.
And the coaching, you can't ignore that, too. It's not just the players. I know Ralph likes to bring this up a lot. It's the coaching, too.
Absolutely.
And the family. That's for Rodney.
The Rooney. If I could dream up a great ownership, it would be the Rooneys. I mean, we're into the third generation. These guys just get it done. They give these guys jobs, and they let them do their job. And to me, that's the greatest thing the owner can do. Hire the right people and let them do their job. Right?
And he's an ambassador now.
Oh, yes. I believe it's Tim Rooney. Tim Rooney, the third generation, is the ambassador to Ireland. All right, guys, we have our next guest who every Monday you can check out his column, which is a Pro Day Rewind on Monday on NFLDraftBible.com. And that's the man who's been keeping us up to date on all the Pro Days. And that's going to be Andrew Garda. Andrew, how are you?
I am tired, but pretty jazzed, man. It's been a pretty good day and a pretty good week for Pro Days.
Okay, let's reset everything for everybody else. This is the NFL. This is our All Access Football Friday show. Rodney Tal, Daniel Morgagnon, Ralph Mancini, and that's Daniel Morgagnon speaking right now.
So, Andrew, before we even get to the Pro Day stuff, I know you were traveling, so you're a USC alum. We already had on Clay Matthews Jr. and Keith Rivers, so you gotta go back there and check out the archive. Like fans who are missing the show, check out that archive. Don't forget.
I definitely will. It makes me wish I had an iPhone so I could listen to it live on the iTunes radio feed. But I always go back and check the shows out, guys. You know that.
Hey, Andrew, Ralph Mancini here. So I understand that you were at the San Jose State Pro Day, and you took a look at quite a few interesting prospects over there. The guy that interests me a lot is Jerron Gilbert, the big defensive tackle. I mean, to me, when I look at this guy, you know, to me, I think that this guy's a can't-miss player, a tremendous athlete. The only question is, where exactly is he going to play? Is he going to be a defensive end? Is he going to be a defensive tackle? What can you tell us about Jerron Gilbert?
Well, Gilbert had a very good day. He had a 37-inch vert, 10-foot, 7-inch broad jump. Definitely started the day off really well. Went out for some linebacker drills, defensive line drills. And we had two coaches at Pro Day today. We had John Fox from the Carolina Panthers and Rex Ryan from, of course, my beloved New York Jets. And I don't know if you've got romantic music, but I thought there was going to be some sort of proposal. I thought there was going to be a marriage proposal. Ryan spent... I mean, he was running the defensive line drills, and there were other guys there, but he spent so much time looking and dealing with Gilbert that I got to think that he is someone they are seriously looking at going forward. He overall had a great day, and a lot of guys are going to be looking at him. And, you know, there are some other players who definitely got some buzz because there were all these other guys there looking at Gilbert, but... He looked good. He ran well. He moved well. He just looked solid, stem to stern.
Well, we're all Jets fans here, so I think the three of us here are falling in love with every word that you speak about this young man.
Yeah, well, like 4-4 shuttle. He looked good there. He did good in the three cone, 7.69, 7.65. And what was funny is I'm talking with Dan right before the position workouts. And Dan's like, you know, I'd love to see him as a Jet. I think he could do this. I think he could do that. And we were joking. He's like, go tell Rex. Go over there and tell Rex that he should talk to Gilbert. 5 seconds later, man. 5 seconds later, there he is over with Gilbert. I mean, definitely everyone was focused on him and seeing what was going on. I mean, he's been an incredibly hot prospect. You know, he's got some speed. He's very aggressive. He's determined. I think he would be a good fit for that Rex Ryan defense over there in New York, but I think there are going to be several teams that are going to be looking really hard at Gilbert And so I'm curious to see where the Jets may try and grab him, because I think the first round may be a little early for him, but some team somewhere may jump. And so we'll see. The Jets last year moved back into the first round to get Dustin Keller because they fell in love with him. Could this be another guy that happens with?
Yeah, I think the value comes into play here, where there's very few guys that could fit the need that he could fit. Before we leave San Jose State, what can you tell us about our boy Christopher Owens? How good did he look? Could he possibly be passing his former teammate Coy Francisa on the cornerback charts?
He probably could. He had a better day than Francisa today. I talked to both Coy and your boy Owens, who says hey, by the way. But Owens was faster than he was. I thought he looked a little bit sharper in the drills. Another guy that Rex Ryan made a point of talking to today. So another guy that's definitely on the Jets' radar. They're very happy with Dwight Lowry. So they're definitely looking at, you know, San Jose State for some other potential players. So he definitely had a very solid day, had a nice 40, just looked all around good, and I think he interviewed real well with guys when he did talk to teams and scouts. I think he came off as very personable and also very coachable. So I think that Owens is going to – I think he's probably passed Francis, who I like, but has sort of been sliding a little bit since the Senior Bowl, really. He came off the Senior Bowl pretty hot. Combine, he was okay. And then since then, it just seems like his buzz has sort of died a little bit. So I think Francis is probably going to be a decent corner, but I don't think teams are as hot on him. And Owens, I would say, is definitely surpassed.
Interesting. And, you know, before you went to the San Jose State Pro Day, you were at Cal on Wednesday. They got a couple of intriguing prospects there who, ironically, do play in a 3-4 defense at the college level. It seems to be the whole theme of the show. What did you see at Berkeley on Wednesday?
Well, Berkeley was a little bit weird. There was a huge amount of every team was there.
Oh,
about, yeah. Well, the thing that happened with Berkeley, though, is that Zach Follett didn't work out because he had a hammy problem, and then Anthony Felder pulled his hammy when he was doing his 40, so he did 140 that nobody counted because he pulled his hammy in the middle of it. So it really was the Alex Mack show. And he looked fantastic. There are a lot of teams who are very interested in him. I waited a couple hours to get an interview or just talk with him after his pro day. He went in before it ended, before Nate Longshore even started his quarterback drills. And we still waited like an hour and a half for him. He was in a film room with three scouts. I could not find out what teams they were from. Still working on it. He was in there for 2+ hours doing chalk talk, looking over film, going through the whole thing, and of course this kid is incredibly bright, so he tested off the charts. People are really high on him, and I think he did a lot to put himself in a position to be, you know, potentially the first center taken off the board. It would not shock me to see him go somewhere in the 20s. And again, another guy that a lot of teams were looking at and wondering, do I have to move up to get it? Do I have to make a couple of trades, move back? What can I do? Because he's another guy who you can't take too early in that first round, but he looks like a guy that someone's going to be able to get in there. Not only can he play center, he can also play guard. He just looked great and really impressed the whole group there. Walking away, I was impressed with him. I've seen enough tape, but the dude not only is good on the field, but he's smart.
Hey, Andrew, if you could find out, for us, If Arizona was there, if any representatives from the Arizona Cardinals were there, they're picking late in the first round, and they really have a need at the center position. So if you can get back to us maybe next time we talk, maybe next week, and find that out for us if you could.
Sure. I know they were there, but I don't know if they were the ones in the scouting room, but I'll see what I can do. I'll make a couple of calls.
That's why we pay you the big bucks, man. Get that ear to the grindstone.
The what now?
All right, Andrew, I know you're tired, all right, but what do you got coming up for us next week?
There's a lot of stuff coming up this week. You know, you start off with UConn's Donald Brown. He's a guy who's a hot prospect right now. I know he's going in to test with the Jets, or has gone in the test with the Jets. He's got a lot of teams kind of interested with him. He's high on Mike Mayock's ranking boards. He's high on a lot of people's boards. I want to see what he does to see if he can maybe leapfrog or solidify where he's going to be going forward. He's on March 25th. Another guy I'm interested in looking at is Louisville's Hunter Cantwell on the 26th. I'm of the mind that while there are a couple of really good guys in this quarterback class overall, a lot of projects. So honestly, once you get to that second day, it's who you fall in love with. Do you like chocolate donuts? Do you like donuts with sprinkles? Hunter Cantwell could be a guy who could be an interesting project for a team who's willing to really work him along. If he's in the right situation, he could flourish. But I want to see him do well, and where he falls or if he's a street free agent is going to depend on what he does. Of course, you got Michael Oher on the 26th for Mississippi's Day. Jarek Diller on Rice is March 26th. I'm interested to see what he can do. You know, you've got Arakpo coming up. Kenny Britt out of Rutgers, wide receiver. I want to see what he can do. Again, there are some wide receivers I really like, but Britt's a guy who's moved up on people's boards. I'm intrigued to see who comes out to see him and who might start looking at him as a possible private workout guy. So there's all of those guys, and of course you also got like Aaron Curry, March 23rd. So there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff coming into this week, and of course I'm sure we're going to have a couple people pop and surprise people this week, as we do almost every week. I mean, today I got to see Ramses Barden as well, because Cal Poly had their workout after San Jose State. He topped his 4.6 time from the combine. He had a lot of guys interested in him. So there's always one guy that during the week that we weren't talking about before that suddenly we are talking about at the end of the week, and I'm sure there are going to be a couple people come next Friday where I'm going to be like, you know what, now I got to go back and look at this film.
Hey, Andrew, before we let you go, I got to ask you a question. You lost me a little bit. Why, again, do I have to choose between the chocolate donut and the sprinkle one? I can't get both?
You could. That's why they pay you the big bucks, man. You look at the film and you tell me where there's a chocolate sprinkle donut, and you go get that one, baby.
Hey, throw in a crawler while you're at it, too.
All right. I think a crawler's probably just a little flaky. Your crawler might be Pat White or possibly Andre Smith.
All right. Andrew, on that note, we say thank you and good night, and we'll be speaking with you. And also to remind everyone, once again, every Monday, Pro Day Rewind, what Andrew Gardner was talking about here, he writes in depth on the Monday, the article on the NFLDraftBible.com. So go by, check it out, and you get more information. Andrew, 1 second.
And Andrew, also tell us a little bit about your radio show, The Thundering Blurb, and when people can listen to that.
You can check me out every Wednesday night on blogtalkradio.com's Fantasy Sports Channel. It's on 7 o'clock Pacific. I almost said Western. 7 o'clock Pacific, and that would be 10 Eastern p.m. for you folks. And, you know, each week we've been having a bunch of different guests. Some player interviews that I've gotten over the last few days will surface there, as well as they will on NFLDraftBible.com. You can catch me each and every week. And also you can check me out on ThunderingBlurb.com. Where I put a lot of my general notes and news and notes before it hits anywhere else. And you can always do what a lot of people did today and follow me on Twitter.com. You go Twitter.com/ThunderingBlurb, and you get the 4 million Twitters that I sent Dan's way today, and hopefully you'll find some good information in there. But it was great to be able to give people some live stuff throughout the day. So follow me on that. I have SoCal coming up and possibly UCLA, so you know, keep it going, and then you'll know what's going on as it happens.
Yeah, I thought I was special getting those emails today. You're telling me anybody could have gotten those today?
Well, you were getting extra ones, actually. So you are special, Dan. You are the chocolate donut with the sprinkles, man.
Unfortunately, he's right.
All right, Andrew. Thank you again. We'll speak to you again next week.
All right, guys. I will have probably more sleep. I can't guarantee I'll be as hilarious, but I'll try.
Nah, I was going to suggest you also get some sleep, all right? Get some rest.
We'll talk to you next week, and we'll have an ice cream sundae waiting for you.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I'll have more donut humor.
All right, our next guest is he's the new guy, the new man here.
New man of the
block. New host on NFL Draft Bible. It's Brian Spector. He'll have a show on Tuesday and Thursday. All right, Brian, welcome to the show. I'm Rodney Tao. You're also sitting with Danny Mogagnon and Ralph Mantini.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right. Welcome to the program. Welcome to the site. How are you?
Thank you.
So, Brian, Krispy Kreme or Dunkin' Donuts?
You know what, guys? I have to say I'm not a donut guy. I don't like donuts, but if you guys are going to start dishing out the sundaes, I'm in.
All right, Brian, we're talking linebackers today. You working down there in Florida, the place that produces as many or more football talent than anywhere in the country. You're an executive producer with the Big O Show there in Miami. You guys, you talk to these kids all the time. Tell me a little bit about a guy we like a lot that we talked a little bit about, Franz Joseph. I believe he went to your alma mater. Why is this guy getting overlooked by so many people?
You know what it is? Every year there are a lot of – I'm a big believer in players in small-time schools. And to give you an example, Marcus Ware went to Troy. And a lot of these players don't get the looks because they're at a small school that other players will get looked at, per se, a top 25 school. I don't necessarily agree with it. I have a lot of favorites, prospects in this upcoming draft, a lot from smaller schools. I actually spoke to Franz Joseph today. Besides the fact that he went to my alma mater, I have reasons as to why I love this kid. First off, any kid that plays football for 4 years under head coach Howard Schnellenberger is got to be a football player, because Howard Schnellenberger is not going to have kids on his team that can't play the game, don't study the game, aren't willing to learn the game. Right now, this kid is over 6'2", as you guys know, and he's over 240 pounds right now. He hasn't even gotten into an NFL camp. Once he gets into an NFL camp, he's going to be, if I'm taking a guess, close to 255 pounds. He's physical, he's tenacious, and I think he is more fit for a 3-4 scheme versus a 4-3, and that bodes well for him because you look at a lot of teams are transitioning to that 3-4 defense.
Yeah, it's interesting you point out, because also another guy out of Troy, O.C. Umanyoro, who was a second-round pick, he didn't even get a combine invite, just like Mr. Joseph. So sometimes those combine committees, they don't always get it right. They let some guys go through the process and get left out.
Absolutely. And you know, people ask me a lot of questions, and I've spoken to Dan about this through emails back and forth, and even Rick. And the one thing that bodes well for Franz Joseph, and in my own backyard here in Miami, I'll use the Dolphins as a perfect example. In a 3-4 defense, the Dolphins have a player like Channing Crowder. Channing Crowder is the Mike linebacker. He makes all the calls. When you're a middle linebacker in a 3-4, you don't necessarily have to cover sideline to sideline, which is what you have to do in a 4-3 defense. Like a Zach Thomas, you have to be able to play the middle and run sideline to sideline. Speed isn't the main necessity for a middle linebacker in a 3-4 system. Basically, your job is just to cover your zone. Pass coverage, stay in your area, make sure no one comes across in your area. A slot receiver is going to come across the middle. He's going to get hit hard by that big 3-4 middle linebacker. It also gives you the opportunity to get in there, get in the trenches, try and clog the hole, stop the running back, and try and get to the quarterback on blitzes. Very little responsibility, per se, from a large coverage area, and it bodes well for a kid of that magnitude.
Hey, Brian. Ralph Mancini here. We've been analyzing throughout the show a lot of these hybrid players, linebackers / defensive ends, and one of the bigger names out there is Everett Brown. Some people have compared him to Gaines Adams. He's a very athletic kid, long arms, great lower body strength. What can you tell us about Everett Brown?
Everett Brown, if I'm an NFL general manager or I'm an NFL executive, I'm foaming at the mouth when it comes to Everett Brown. First off, the guy has prototypical size. Like you said, Ralph, he's got very long arms, which means he's able to get off of offensive tackles. A guy down here like Joey Porter, the one knock on Joey Porter is the fact that he can't take on offensive tackles. A lot of his sacks come against tight ends, come against running backs, and they look to get Joey Porter mismatches. With a guy like Everett Brown, and I know the Florida State University success ratio for defensive ends has not been successful in the past, but I have a different feeling with Everett Brown. I feel he's quick, where he can get around offensive tackles, and like you said, he has very great strength, lower body, which means that if he gets engaged with a tackle, I feel that with a bull rush, he can rush people and push them back into the quarterback. So his speed is an asset, and he's already 6'4", 255 pounds. The one knock from what I've heard on him is pass coverage if he goes to a 3-4. But most guys are defensive ends in college that transition to 3-4 linebackers. They all have that pass coverage weakness because they've never played in it before. But I believe if a guy is athletic enough, and Everett Brown is extremely athletic, I don't think there's anything he can do. I could look at Everett Brown going number 5 to Cleveland, but I have him going no lower than the top 10.
All right, Brian, how about, let's stay in Florida, South Florida Bulls, how about Tyrone McKenzie? What's your thoughts on him?
I like Tyrone McKenzie. He's a bit of a tweener. I mean, we don't know if he can play the inside. He can play the outside. He has to put on a lot of weight. Right now, I believe he's around 235 pounds. The one thing about him that I love is that he has incredible instincts. He can diagnose plays. He has an idea of where the ball is always going to be. So that's a positive. Like I said, he's going to have to put on a lot more weight. He comes from a great program in South Florida. Jim Leavitt has a lot of great ball players. Some people also say, well, you know, he played relatively with George Selvey. Does that make him a product of the system? Does that make him, does he have to be a good ball player to have better ball players around him, or is he a guy that can dominate? I don't know if he can dominate per se. I do like what I see from him. You know, I believe he is a guy on the rise. I don't feel that he's an Everett Brown, of course. He's not Brian Arakpo. I mean, I'm a big fan of Larry English. I don't necessarily say he's Larry English. But the one knock is going to be he's a bit of a tweener. What is he at the next level? He's going to have to put on a lot of weight. But I like him because one thing you can't teach is instincts. There are guys that have a knack for knowing where the ball is, where the ball carrier is going to go. Is it going to be pitched to the outside? Is there going to be a hitch pattern? Is it going to be a quick out? Is it going to be a quick slant? And the one thing about him is that he has incredible instincts when it comes. And football instincts are one of those things that you can't teach.
Hey, Brian, I just want to clarify something for the listeners. When you say tweener, you're talking about, because we've been talking a lot of tweeners in terms of defensive end, outside linebacker. With McKenzie, I believe you're talking about, is he an inside guy or outside guy? Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, right now at 235, he'd have to play more of the outside. I just don't feel that he can take the pounding playing the inside. He'd have to be a 3-4 linebacker, in my opinion, as well. He needs guys around him. And like you said, tweener's a very delicate term because, you know, players look – these teams will look at players and say, all right, well, he fits my system if he puts on 15 pounds. There are players that can put on weight and keep the weight on. There are players that can put it on and lose it. There are a lot of guys that fluctuate with their weight. So a team has to look at Tyrone and say, hey, great athleticism, great ball instincts, great kid, comes from a great program. Does he fit what we're doing? I look at Tyrone more of a, I don't want to say a system player, but I look at his being successful at the next level based on a system a team plays.
Okay. All right, Brian, before we let you go, tell us a little bit about your show that's going to be debuting next week.
Well, fellas, next week and every other show, we're going to have a lot of great guests. We're going to implement a lot of callers. It's going to be all NFL all the time. Like you guys, I'm a big draft geek right now, all about the draft, all about the NFL. We could talk anything in the NFL, free agency, what you think your team needs, what you think they're going to go for in the draft. Anything NFL, we are definitely going to talk on that on my show. Anything at all, it can be from Jay Cutler, your thoughts, anything at all. It's going to be all NFL. So if you're a football fan, take a listen to the show, participate in the show, give us a call. Your input is always wanted. It's always accepted, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have a little comedy. We're going to mix in a lot of stuff. We're going to give all of our own opinions, and everyone's entitled to their own opinion. So freedom of speech. Everybody is allowed to call and give their opinions based on the topics that are going on, and we'll make sure that we bring you some of the top college prospects, a lot of NFL players in the league right now, coaches, NFL reporters, everything that you can possibly imagine. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right, Brian, that's going to be Tuesdays and Thursdays. What's the time on Tuesday and Thursday?
Tuesdays, we're going to be on from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock Eastern time. And Thursday is going to be 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock, of course, p.m. Eastern time as well. Everybody call up, have an input, and we'll discuss anything and anything at all, college football, NFL, it's all football all the time.
All right, Brian, thanks for joining us. We look forward to checking out your show, and we look forward to having you as a guest again. Thank you once again for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. You have a good night. Always great talking to you, and I look forward to talking to you guys again soon.
All right, welcome to the family.
All right, good
Thanks,
stuff,
guys.
Brian.
A pleasure.
All right, we're running short, 32 seconds. Just a quick aside.
No, that's what I was going to say. It's big for All Access Football and the NFL Draft Bible. Now we're going to have shows Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, in addition to all the other stuff we have, player spotlights, coaches' corners. Keep an eye out for all that stuff.
Real quick, Dan, you did a couple of interesting spot interviews this week as far as the coaches.
Yeah, coaches' corners, Mike Leach, as well as Tom O'Brien from NC State. Good stuff for both of those guys. Mike Leach holds no bars.
And Legal Line, Scott Dan has two articles. Please check that out.